You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes!
The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
This NBA postgame is brought to you by Geico. Switch to Geico today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com, get a rate quote, and get started seeing how much you could save. Welcome to Meadowlark Media's official NBA Finals coverage, live on site here in San Francisco, California. I'm Amin El-Hassan. I am sitting courtside at the Chase Center. GP just walked behind me. There's a lot going on. There's not a whole lot of real estate, as I said to the guys before I started recording. I'm joined in San Francisco by Mo Dakil, who is not here. He's unsanctioned by the NBA, ladies and gentlemen. He's off the grid, so he's in town, presumably to participate in the boozing and the debauchery, but none of the actual basketball work in person. Mo, how's it going?
That's the way I like to operate, is I don't actually like to work around people. So instead, I actually just enjoyed watching the game at the bar.
He's a real video guy, folks. He watches basketball, gets drunk, stays away from people. That's pretty much the job. The job tonight was completed by the Boston Celtics, who pulled off one hell of a comeback, defeating the Warriors 120-108. Mounting a furious fourth quarter comeback. The Warriors led by 15 points at one point in the second half. But again, the Celtics come storming back in the fourth quarter, outscoring the Warriors 40-16 in the fourth quarter. Celtics were led by Al Horford. That's right. Stu Gatz's MVP, Al Horford, dropped 26 points and 6 rebounds, 6 of 8 from 3. Jaylen Brown, 24 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists. Hell, even my man Derek White was out there letting everybody know you must not have league pass. 21 points, 5 of 8 from 3. Jason Tatum, a relatively quiet night, 12 points, but he had 13 assists. He was moving that thing, and he was a plus 16 in the plus minus. For the Warriors, Steph Curry had a big first quarter, scoring 21 points, but he only had 13 points after that, 34 points total, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, and then Wiggins, 20 points and 5 rebounds. So, Mo, what'd you see out there? Let me give you the generic question to start this. What'd you see out there, Mo?
I mean, ultimately, we just saw the Celtics defense kind of come alive, in particular in the fourth quarter, when you just say those numbers. And the big difference, was, one, they were able to slow down the Warriors in terms of pace. The Warriors weren't getting as many easy shots quickly the way they normally like to. And they shut down the offensive rebounding. The Warriors had 11 offensive rebounds in the first three quarters. One in the fourth quarter alone. And while I stall to pull up that part of the stat sheet, they did.
We all stall.
They got a three off of that offensive rebound, but that was it. And that's where they were doing a ton of their damage throughout most of the game. And I think eventually, the Celtics, once they decided to lock down and rebound defensively, it sort of started to work in their favor.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy, Mo. I think I'm going to have a take that's not shared by a lot of people. I think everyone's going to focus on the Celtics defense and the tremendous job they did in the fourth quarter. I'm going to go in a different direction. I'm going to say that what happened was the Warriors defense was non-existent all night long.
I want to jump on that train with you, and the reason why I want to jump in, I don't think they could play Jordan Poole and Steph Curry in this series together.
Dude, there might be a question whether you could play Jordan Poole at all, bro.
I mean, you might need to just spell Steph Curry and hope Poole gets hot. But I mean, in this game, and granted, it's a one game sample. In 16 minutes, with the two of them on the court, they had a negative 40.8 net rating.
That's not good.
Not good at all. And I think that's just one of those things. You're giving the Celtics extra targets to go at. Poole's terrible defensively, and it works perfectly for the Celtics.
And the Warriors tried to hide it by going into a box and one. They try to go to a zone. They threw a lot of junk defenses out there. Kudos to the Celtics. They figured it out, man. They made the adjustments after, you know, initially kind of being thrown off, I think, by it. They made the adjustments of getting the ball out, swinging it, finding the lanes, the passing lanes, and taking advantage of it, and getting wide open shot after wide open shot after wide open shot. I was walking around here. I heard somebody say, oh, but, you know, they're not going to shoot like that again, meaning the Celtics. And I said, well, they are if they're going to get those kind of shots.
It's funny because in the first half, they were the ones giving up all the open threes. Right?
Yes.
Like when you saw that defense in the first half against Steph Curry, they gave Curry wide open three after wide open three in the first quarter. And I was like, yo, you might want to guard this dude. He's pretty freaking good.
Yeah. So, I mean, like the weird thing, Mo, and you know this, like sometimes when you watch a game and the score can be heavily in favor of one team, you're not saying that, oh, this is going to end or they're going to lose, but you can see like, okay, that's not right. Right, the process is yielding a result that's not commensurate with the process. So, for instance, like we said, Warriors defense was terrible all night long. I don't care what the score was. Every shot that the Celtics won, they got, and it was pretty wide open. They were not able to contest or get Boston out of its offense, even as Tatum took some tough shots and missed them. I really liked the way he moved the ball. The other thing on the other end was, man, the Warriors weren't doing what they usually do, which is have guys slip into the basket, getting easy baskets in the painted area. I thought Robert Williams did a tremendous job of like basically saying, not around here. Forcing Golden State to shoot a bunch more threes, which they hit early, but as the game wore on, they missed.
Yeah, I mean, the opportunities just weren't there. Like a great example, too, of there's a play where in the fourth quarter, Steph Curry's driving into the lane off of a great back cut on Derek White. As he's going up for the layup, Williams just comes in from the weak side and completely rejects that shot. And you can see it on the replay if you rewatch that play. Curry had no idea Williams was there. It was almost like he forgot that there was a shot blocker on the floor. Because when he played the Mavs, there was none of that experience, right? There was no real guy you had to watch out for coming in that's going to just wipe away a shot the way Williams did. And I think ultimately, he was just solid presence in the paint. And I just think some of it was just the Warriors' shot selection, too. Like Iguodala going for a fadeaway in the post. Like, that's not a shot you're going to live with if you're the Warriors. If you're Boston, you're like, yes, please, Andre, shoot more of those, please.
How surprised were you that Boston went small? Coach Udoka, by the way, again, another great coaching job, another great set of in-game adjustments, another time where I believe he outcoached his opposing coach, who was his opponent, was a top 15 coach of all time for the second straight series. He did an amazing job, and they went small. They said he liked their ability to switch. He liked their ability to pre-switch and get out there a lot quicker. And obviously, offensively, it helped them with the spreading of the offense.
Yeah, I think they actually have to go small. I think when they played big, they were getting hurt on the court. I think that was an issue for them in the sense of the Warriors were finding opportunities to take advantage of Horford, having to switch on to like Clay a couple of possessions, having to have to, you know, find opportunities where just playing two bigs wasn't sustainable for the Celtics in the long run in this. And then going small, again, spreading the floor. Derek White hitting a lot of threes that were really pivotal.
I thought we were done with the Derek White game. We got another one. I thought that was just
No. You're never going to – you can't quit him, Amin. You cannot quit him. Yeah. He won't let you.
It's funny. I tweeted it. In the middle of the first half, I was like, it's like they'd never seen Steph Curry play before because of so many open threes they let him hit. And then, like, immediately after Derek White hit, like, his second wide-open three, and I was like, it's like they've never seen Derek White play before. And I was just kind of tongue-in-cheek. But I'll be damned if he didn't keep it up, man. He kept
no,
it up.
No, it was
Shout
impressive. It was impressive, man. He's coming in. He's knocking down big shots. And it's really that run at the start of the fourth quarter, right? Because, like, listen, the Warriors scored 92 points in the first three quarters, and I've been saying they got to score 110 or more to win the series. Like, they got to be averaging that throughout the entire run. They finished with 108 and they lost, so I just barely get to skate by on my prediction.
I know. Even though your prediction had nothing to do – your prediction was like, hey, they got to be a high-scoring affair, and they lost a high-scoring affair pretty much. But still, your line is intact.
I'm still good. I'm still good right there. By 2 points, I'm going to roll with it. But I think the ultimate thing was just that run. The Warriors had back-to-back turnovers. Jaylen Brown gets a steal and finds Pritchard in transition. They find Al Horford on trailing threes. Like, there were just a lot of different looks that they were able to get off of that, and it was that big run that opened it up. And then the Warriors just go scoreless for like the last 4 or 5 minutes in the fourth quarter, right? Like, they score. Yeah. Steph Curry hits a nice move, like loses White and gets a step through bucket, and they don't score again until Klay Thompson gets a layup with like a minute 12 left, and that game was over.
And by the way, you know how he got that layup? They got a stop. Finally got a stop, and they got to hit ahead, and then he got a wide open layup. Like that to me, people are going to go back to Boston stifling defense. And now I'm not trying to take anything away. They defended their asses off. They were able to lock in, particularly in one-on-one defensive situations that the Warriors devolved into as the fourth quarter wore on. But the reality is, the reason why they were stuck in the stagnant offense is because they couldn't stop Boston. Everything was coming off of a Boston make, and they're walking it up. And by the way, this Chase Center crowd, man, meek, so meek. Even when things were going good, it was loud. It wasn't no Oracle loud, definitely. But it wasn't even, I told you before we started recording, Mo, it wasn't even Cleveland loud. It was regular season loud. Like, oh, we're on a run. Okay, it was that kind of loud. The loudest ovation of the night was when Barry Bonds got shouted out. I don't know how much was on TV and what wasn't, right?
Yeah, like, I didn't see the Barry Bonds shout out. But ultimately, you can just feel it. Like, you know, even the bar I was at to watch this game, it didn't fill up until the second half. Like, to me, I'm
for
watching
real?
This going, like, I'm
what
serious.
What are they doing?
Like,
what are they doing?
What was shocking to me, is like, I'm like, oh, crap, it's 5:45. I better run downstairs to get a
like,
good seat.
Like,
because
you won't get a seat. Exactly.
Right. And
yeah.
I'm thinking, like, and I have my laptop. I'm going to break down the game while doing this because I'm a nerd. I'm that dude at the bar. And sure enough, I get a table next to the only outlet, and I look around. I go, like, nobody's here. And nobody was there through the first quarter. Nobody was there through the second quarter. It slowly starts to fill in. And
that's
I'm just
next
like,
level.
I was like, this is embarrassing. But also, in my mind, I'm like, this is kind of great. Is this what it's going to be like on Sunday? Can I do this on Sunday?
Sure, man. So a couple of things. First of all, if you're listening to this, you're just like, where's Tom? Tom was in Miami today for Lollapalooza. They did an event with the Miami Marlins, honoring Lou Gehrig Day, and obviously all the ALS, raising money for ALS research. If you haven't given, go to worldofsui.com. There's a link over there. They're trying to reach a goal of $44,444. You know, do the right thing. Be a part of something good. As you guys may or may not know, Tom's mother suffers from ALS. And so this is a cause that's real near and dear to him. And a lot of other people were in the Lebatard family. I know Book Shambi has an ALS benefit. So definitely get involved and make sure you are contributing because it's something worth doing. Chris Whittingham has just updated me that we've raised $74,000.
Great job.
As of this recording right now, which is at 9:15 Pacific time. That doesn't mean we can't keep raising more money.
Push it up.
Yeah,
Push it up, guys.
74,000.
Let's get to 100K.
I was going to say 88,888 because it's double. But sure, 100K. Go ahead and one up me, Stu Gatz. Go ahead. 100K. All right.
What do you want me to do? Let's push this thing up. Can I give you some fourth quarter numbers from this game? Because these are pretty interesting.
Please
interesting
do.
Things. Just in the fourth quarter alone, Warriors had 4 turnovers. Celtics scored 10 points off of that. Celtics, just 1 turnover. That, you know, that's the big difference right there.
But by the way, in a game that wasn't a lot of this, they both sides took care of the ball. Chase Center is one of the weird arenas. Not weird, but I kind of actually like it. Not admire it. I respect it. I appreciate. They have the four factors up on the board at all times on the score. Their scoreboard is like the size of an arena itself, right? It's huge. Right. So they've got all types of stuff. But I'm looking at the four factors right now. Warriors turnover percentage 12.9%. Celtics turnover percentage 12.4%. So both teams took care of the ball. The free throw rates were roughly comparable, 17 or 0.17, I should say, for the Warriors, 0.188 for the Celtics, so slightly in the Celtics' favor. The offensive rebound percentage, higher for the Warriors, 27.3% versus 20.6%. But here's the big difference. Effective field goal percentage, Celtics, 62.9.
Yeah.
And that wasn't because of a hot end. They were consistently high 50s, low 60s all game long. They never had a cold streak in terms of shooting. They never got it turned over. They basically got whatever they wanted offensively.
Well, let me ask you, Amin.
Yeah.
Let's just look forward to Sunday. Mm-hmm. You're the Warriors. Besides playing Jordan Poole less, because I think that's both of our answers.
Yep.
What do you need to change?
Oof. Well, I think Steve Kerr, I know he likes to pull Steph out after the first quarter and then bring him back and man, you gotta ride that hot hand a little bit more, I think, offensively. You gotta, you know, obviously within reason. I think defensively, they've got to figure something out. The zone is not going to work. Box and one is not going to work. They're going to have to man up, I think, and do a better job defensively in help and recovery rather than – because it wasn't that, like – it wasn't schematically the – like, they messed up rotations.
Yeah.
And this is what I worried about, Mo. I worried about guys like Poole, like Wiggins, who were you going to be able to do the right thing over and over again? And sure enough, there were defensive breakdowns because they forgot or they stayed a little bit too long in here when, you know, at some point you got to release and that's not my responsibility anymore. That's someone else's, because once that ball goes out there, that's my responsibility. I thought there was a lot of neglect of those kind of duties and that trust factor, if you want to call it that, to figure out, you know, hey, when does my job here end and my job over here commence somewhere else? And so if you're the Warriors, you're going to watch a lot of film.
Right.
And rotation-wise, I think, like you said, it's not necessarily not playing Poole, but just not combining him into lineups that already are compromised in a way.
This is a tough game as a coach, just because like part of your instructions is do better. You know, it's like it's almost just, hey, you guys, we screwed up. We didn't do our game plan. We got to play better. We don't even know if the game plan's proper because we didn't execute it. It's execute better. And then the other thing too is like, you know, when Al Horford, after he hits, you know, goes 3 of 4 from three, you might want to close out harder on him.
But it's not about they didn't close. It was guys not knowing where they're supposed to be.
I mean, there was one possession coming out of a make, and Draymond wasn't anywhere near him, and Horford got a wide open corner three, and we didn't get to on the TV screen. We didn't get to fully see what happened. They were whatever showing Kerr or something, and then cut back to it. So like I all I know is when it came back to him, Draymond was on the other side of the paint, and Horford was wide open for a corner three, and it's just like those are mistakes you can't have. Period. Like it doesn't.
Yeah, it was legit. It was Boston getting exactly what they wanted. Said it's really what the Warriors' offense typically is. We're going to do this, and as a result, they've got three choices: either they're going to give up this layup, they're going to give up this shot, this three pointer here, or they're going to give up this three pointer here. And Golden State was giving up two out of three of those shots every single time down.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, Visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
I want to talk a little bit about like this this environment here. So first of all, Jay-Z was here, and the PA announcer said, "Ladies and gentlemen, one of the most influential creators of all time, Jay-Z." And I thought, like, a little bit of a like, I get it. I love her, whatever. Right. But like, relax, man. You can just say, "Hey, music artist, recording on Grammy, whatever." Like, one of the most influential creators of all. What does that even mean, man? So then what they end up doing for the rest of the game is they played the DJ emptied the chamber on every single Jay-Z instrumental he had. We heard an NYMP instrumental at one point. I was like, come on, man. These are deep cuts. These are deep cuts.
Why not? I mean, like, do you feel like Too Short's a bit offended now?
One of the highlights, I won't lie, one of the highlights in the quarter break, they played Blow the Whistle, and then right before the fourth quarter start, DJ plays What's My Favorite Word, and then he cuts the music, and then the whole arena says, "Bitch," and that, you know. I was like, okay, there's a little bit of Oakland made it. A little bit of Oakland made it past over the bridge. What are some other things that happened? Oh, I saw Spike Lee in the tunnel. It was me, Logan Murdoch, and Vinnie Goodwill. And he came by and he said, "What's up" to us. And we suspected just because it was three black media people.
He said, "What's up?"
Right? He had no idea who we were, but he was like, "Cause this is how I know." Because he came up, he dapped us all up. He said, "Brothers, brothers, brothers." And we're like, "Yeah, he definitely doesn't know who we are."
No. Just happy to see you guys.
He's just happy for the culture. He was happy for the culture. Who else is there? I'd said Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds got the biggest. Barry Bonds got a standing ovation. Straight up. Yeah, like, and people were crazy when they saw him. The dude from Journey was here. He played the national anthem.
Is that who he is?
That's who it was.
I had no, like, when they do the national anthem and they give this, I'm like, this is who you got?
Dog, it was Bay Area's own Neil something something. I'm like, I don't know. When they said he's from Journey, I was like, oh, is it my man Steve? What's his name? The guy who's got that high-pitched voice. Steve.
I got no chance of knowing who. I couldn't name you any of the members from Journey. They're just Journey. I mean, I didn't even know there's more than one.
I bet you Bill Simmons knows. Bill Simmons was here sitting courtside. He said, credential. I'm doing this shit big time.
He's a fan. This is his moment. What else was going on at Chase Center that caught your eye?
Well, the TV timeouts feel longer than ever, man. I've never seen this. You know how, like, halftime acts are like, oh, this acrobat, this trapeze person, whatever. They had one of those for a TV timeout. And I was like, how do we have enough time? And I thought she would be rushed or whatever. Nah, bro, she did her whole routine. I'm like, damn. We get back to some basketball here. By the way, this is Chris Whittingham chiming in. National anthem got roasted on social media. It should have been, because that dude was loud as hell. At one point, Bielitsa was covering his ears. Did they show that?
No, I didn't see that.
Literally had fingers in his ears because the electric guitar was just too f***ing loud, man.
He's just like a little kid. He was like the kid at the Queen Jubilee. Maybe five people will get that reference, but like putting his fingers in his ears.
Exactly, exactly. Also, Steve Perry is the name we were looking for. Steve Perry.
You can always count on Whittingham to come through in the clutch for us. Yeah. Appreciate you, Whitty.
Crack research staff.
But more importantly, I mean, I looked at the menu. And I saw those desserts. I said, oh, there's desserts. Let's see what's there. And what pumps to mind but flan?
Oh, yeah, baby.
And here we go, man.
Oh,
As when you speak of me, speak well, because I have flan waiting for you.
So you said, oh, man, they even got your breakfast flan here. And you said, oh, should I get you one? And I don't know if you were joking or not, but I was like, yes. Because I thought, man, he's going to think I'm playing, but I'm serious. But you actually did get it, so thank you. I'm going to just have to procure it
somehow.
And refrigerate it, because the most important thing about breakfast flan is that it's nice and cold, bro. Nice, cold.
Where I'm staying, ain't no refrigerator. I mean,
no fridges,
the room I'm at,
This is where
there's I've checked into the place, and I thought there's a 50-50 chance. I was like, oh, this is where I die.
Are you near Union Square like me?
Yeah.
Okay, so just to give people an idea, Union Square in San Francisco is... like, it's a weird thing because it's, like, got a little park in the middle, and it's got these high-end boutiques everywhere, like Gucci, Yves Saint Laurent, the Nike store, Macy's, like, Hublot watches, whatever. Like, a very nice collection of kind of retail. And then there's just like meth central.
Yes.
I went to Walgreens today and I had some lady she just made eye contact with me and shook, like trembled her whole body. But like maintaining eye contact. And was she asking me for money? Was she like, I didn't know. I was just like, so I just looked, I just made eye contact back because I thought it'd be rude if I didn't look into her eyes.
You're not supposed to look at them in the eyes. I mean, that's when they attack.
I thought we like had a deep soulful connection. Yeah, man, it's some wild shit, man. This is a weird city, man.
I mean, the city itself is weird. Wish we were back in Oakland. We'd probably still stay in San Francisco, though, right?
Like, yeah, that wouldn't change. Because I can't stay at that Oakland Marriott with literally every other media person from around the world.
All right, so if you're Boston, though, going in, like, this is what I always find interesting. You're going into game two. You've won what you played well, right? Like, I think there are things you can clean up. But what are you looking into as if you're Udoka going, like, all right, we got to be better at this?
First thing we're going to watch, first half versus second half, and talk about, like, the adjustments we made and how this is the level of attention to detail that we got to have when guarding this guy. We've got to be cognizant that, for instance, one of the things that did not happen tonight was we didn't get a crazy Klay Thompson game.
Right.
We got an all right Klay Thompson. We didn't get a crazy Klay Thompson game. So that they're going to be on the lookout for that, for the Klay game. Third of all, going to have conversations about what they're going to adjust defensively, right? They're not going to guard them the same way. Look, I get it. Boston was the number one defense in the league this year. Number two is Golden State.
Right.
So this was an uncharacteristic defensive performance by Golden State. They're not this sloppy usually. And this goes back to my what I talked about before the game and in the days leading up to. I said, look, we know that Boston doesn't have anybody with any finals experience, right? Coming into the series, they had zero finals games played among their players, and I think only Coach Udoka has even been to the finals, and that was an assistant coach, right?
Will Hardy, his assistant, also been.
Oh, Will Hardy, Spurs. I'm sorry. Yeah. Both those guys came from San Antonio with experience doing that, right? But other than that, there's very short on finals experience. But almost everybody on the roster has extensive playoff experience. Guys have played in conference finals multiple times and stuff like that. Compare and contrast Golden State, you got Steph, Klay, Draymond, Looney, and Iguodala. Like, those guys won championships, played in finals. So those guys got it. But then, like, everybody else are, like, leagues and leagues past their deepest experience, right? I think Porter might have second-round experience when he was in Washington.
Yeah, he does.
But but then Bielitsa, who didn't play much, obviously, until the end. Jordan Poole, Andrew Wiggins. None of these guys have any real, you know, experience outside of what they've experienced.
Wiggins has only been to the first round before this playoffs. Yeah. Like, this is his first real.
And won one game. He had won one playoff game. In his entire career coming up in this one. Let me ask you another question. Before the game, we found out that all three of their injured players were going to be healthy and ready to go. We saw Iguodala play. He got 12 minutes out there. We saw Porter Jr. play. He got 24 minutes out there. We didn't see Gary Payton the second. You think this is a series that we go see Gary Payton play?
I think so. I actually wasn't sure we were going to see him, because the stuff that was kind of leading up to Payton in particular was more, hey, like, he's available, but there's a chance he might not play. Like, there was things like that kind of out there, so I wasn't expecting him to play. But he's actually going to be important in terms of a guy to play instead of Poole, right? Because he's better defensively and at least will cut and move a little bit on the offensive end and kind of give a little bit of a change of pace situation. One dude who I won't be surprised to mean to play, and this is going to be a little bit wild in terms of just because he has no experience, he's a rookie, but I won't be surprised to see Moses Moody play some as well. They need a little more size on the wing a bit, and it's not like he's massive, but he's bigger than most of their other guys. And I think that's something I would expect to see. I think the rotations are going to change a ton for Golden State. I think Kerr's going to kind of go back to the drawing board here and start to kind of reconfigure things here a little bit.
And that's the wild thing about the playoffs and particularly the finals. It's like you get a game like this and it feels so resounding, right? Like, how can anything change? And then you come back and then the next game is completely different. Because guys that didn't play last game are going to play. Because guys are going to do things differently. They're going to be new points of emphasis. They're going to be new strategies. And that's the beauty of NBA playoff basketball is that chess match. You know what I thought about today? Thought about a couple of things. I thought about, first of all, I thought about the game one where the Cavs, I believe it was the year they got swept. Was that the J.R. Smith? He thought they were up one. You think of that kind of momentum, right, where – you say, even though they ended up losing that game, you're like, well, this is a competitive series. Hell, if JR just put it back up or whatever, we would have won that game. So, like, you know, let's not get ahead of ourselves and thinking that, you know, we're messed up or, you know, we messed up a chance. But then it ended up, yeah, you did mess up a chance.
Yeah, and that was, right? They got swept. That was that series.
So, you know, there are things that happen that may indicate like, oh yeah, like this is gonna be long haul or whatever, you know, like I heard Kendrick Perkins was here a little bit ago talking about Celtics in seven, right? Which I thought is very conservative. If you're a guy picking the Celtics after tonight,
you want it, yeah.
You think, oh man, like look, we took their best shot, we held serve and we got it done. But the reality is it's like, yeah, this is a long series, man. There are gonna be adjustments, there are gonna be things that happen and we got to see who, you know, who responds. Not only who responds with a better game, because again, Jason Tatum didn't have a great. I felt he had a great decision making game.
Yeah, that's a good.
In
way
terms
to put
of
it.
Letting it go, not allowing himself to get trapped, but he didn't have a great shooting game or scoring game. So, how many times is that going to happen? One more thing, by the way, Mo, that I really enjoyed the Celtics doing in the second half. Whenever the Warriors try to run their screen action, they're giving go stuff on the sidelines, they trapped. They trapped on the sidelines every time. And it really smothered it. And I thought that was a really good defensive adjustment. I don't know what the hell that is that's popping behind me. By the way, another tidbit from today. ABC made history today. You know what history they made, Mo?
I actually don't. What was that?
First time in the history, I believe, of any American professional sports or the four major sports, we got a championship series with an all-black broadcast crew. Mark Jones on play-by-play, Mark Jackson as the color analyst, Lisa Salters as the sideline. How about that?
I have a question for you. Do you get credit when you were forced into it by COVID?
Oh, I'm not giving credit to ESPN. I'm giving credit to the people I'm giving credit to are Mark Jackson, Mark Jones and Lisa Salters, right?
They're
to be
great.
Part of that. And to be a part of that, like to you could say, hey, you know, years and years from now, hopefully when that becomes something commonplace, you could say, man, we were the first. That's pretty awesome, man. I can't lie. By the way, or should I tell this story? I don't know if I should even tell this story.
Uh-oh. Now shout I want out to, you to.
Let me say shout out to the NBA, man, because they took care of your boy. But let me tell you something. I went to go pick up my credential, and they were like, yo, they checked my COVID vaccination status. Okay, you're good. Just go in there. And they're like looking. And they looked. It was like they thought they had it here. And they looked under the E's. And they maybe it's under the A's. Da, da, da. And then they looked it up on the computer. And they said, says here your credential was canceled. Or that you were canceled. And I was like, I was canceled? And I said it loud. And everyone turned around like, not that kind of canceled.
Well, everybody was like, everybody turned around, saw you, and were like, well, I mean.
No, but yeah. But also it's like, you know, I have my basketball Illuminati sweatshirt on, and I won't lie. I started thinking about all the episodes I've done with Tom where I've questioned the integrity of the league, the referees, the teams. And I guess it finally caught up to me. And I thought, like, am I going to have to, like, grovel and be like, yo, my bad, I'm sorry. I love it here. Don't kick me out of this Magic Kingdom.
I was just playing, y'all. I was just playing.
I was just playing. It's just jokes. It was just jokes, I swear.
You know, we didn't think we were even close to the truth.
No. Come on. Have a laugh.
And what's that podcast again, I mean?
Basketball Illuminati. Basketball Illuminati. Basketball Illuminati. Say it three times. Keep your third eye open. Shout out to Dominique Foxworth. who invoked the Basketball Illuminati name three times because he wondered whether Steph Curry got paid extra by Under Armour to lose his shoe and then carefully and slowly put it back on, thus giving them that super zoom in focus.
Locked in right into that shoe. That's a good
yep.
It's a good one there. I like that from Dominique. Should we start to wrap up? What are your predictions? Man.
I think game two, we see a different game. I think both teams clamp down defensively and we get the exact opposite of what we got. Tonight we got an offensive explosion. I wish I knew or I had like ESPN stats and info in front of me or something like that. But like, what's that? 19, 21, 34, 40 made threes between two teams in an NBA Finals game. If it's not a record, it's close.
Right there. It's right in the mix.
And for both teams to shoot as well as they did, the Warriors shot 42% from three. The Celtics shot 51% from three. I thought this was an incredibly hyper-efficient game. That's not the norm. And both of these teams, as I said, pride themselves on their defense, 1 and 2 respectively in the league. Is that Mully? Oh, there goes Chris Mullin. Chris Mullin, Gary Payton. My man Uncle Jerome is there holding court. You got Dennis Scott. This is all people on the sideline, by the way. This isn't even the people working. The guys working are Grant Hill, Steve Smith, Matt Weiner, and Shaquille O'Neal.
There we go.
Had a little Phoenix reunion earlier. Me, Shaq, and Leandro Barbosa. Oh, I saw Magic. That's what I saw. I saw Magic in the hallway. Magic and Mike Wilbon. And I am not, like, following up on what we talked about on Lebatard last week or so about Magic. I hammed it up 100%. Hey, OG, how's it going? And like I just come out of the bathroom, my hands were a little wet. I was like, I got wet hands. And so we did like a shoulder bump, and he asked me how everything was going. And man, I won't lie, man. Like, it's kind of cool that Magic Johnson knows who I am. Kendrick Perkins, Jalen Rose.
That's a big, well, you've dropped off quite a bit now on the level of celebrity that you had.
Hey, man.
But to the game, I think the Warriors are going to win game two. Like, I don't think this is going back to Boston 0-2. I think.
But what kind of game? That's easy. The prediction podcasting is easy, right? Prediction radio is easy. But it's like, what kind of game? I think that's more. Because, like, all the things I talked about before the game pretty much happened. Like, if this happens. Like, all the things. Now it comes down to, like, what kind of game are we going to get in game two?
So, with what you're saying in terms of it being a little bit less efficient, you think it's going to be more of a defensive struggle? I still think it's going to be another offensive game. I think the Warriors are going to kind of get going, continue with the pace that they were playing with in the first half. Because, I mean, at least in the first quarter, it really felt like they were getting a lot of the shots they wanted. And on top of that, they started to slow down. A lot of it kind of coincided with Curry going to the bench. You know, when you look at the DraftKings app, the Warriors are 4.5-point favorites. And then the over-under is 215.5. So, like, I think that might be too high. I might take the under on that, take the Warriors.
215, that means, like,
you know, I mean, like, well, they hit the over easily.
107, right?
They hit the over easily today, right, with 120, 108, and I think the over was 211 or somewhere in that range. That's why they kind of ramped it up here a little bit. I think that's probably too high, but I think the Warriors are going to come back, and I think their offense is going to be a bit more explosive throughout the entire game instead of just what we saw in the first and third quarters.
All right, well, let's wrap it up here. Again, it's Amin Alhassan. I'm here at Chase Center. It's Mo Dakhil. He's not here at Chase Center, but he's here in San Francisco in a hotel.
Somewhere in the Bay Area, floating around.
Zach Harper, by the way. Not here at all. Even though Zach, talk about this fraud. Let me just say this right now. Zach Harper was in San Francisco this week and then left for the finals. Didn't come here for the finals. He left for the finals. So you know what? To hell with him. He's working radio right now. He won't hear this. And one last time, worldofsui.com. Make sure you get up there. Raise some more money. We're at 74,000 as of the start of this podcast. Perhaps we can get it up to 100,000, according to Mo. Just blowing my 88888 out the water. So,
let's just go big. Go big, folks.
All right. Make sure you listen to Mo Dakhil on One More Thing, his videos on Twitter and Instagram. Make sure you're listening to The Athletic Podcast, reading his work, following him on all the socials. Make sure you listen to Basketball Illuminati, Cinephobe. We're in Matthew McConaughey month. Ghost of Girlfriend Past. Spoiler alert, I don't like it.
Phobe. Shocking.
Make sure you listen to Mystery Crate. Yes, if you're a Star Wars person. We gave you two, not one, but two Mystery Crate episodes this week, breaking down Obi-Wan Kenobi. Again, spoiler alert, Phobe. Not liking it. Make sure you're listening to the Dan Le Batard Show. Of course you are. That's why you listen to this shit. All right. With that said, me and Mo got to go drink. Good night, guys.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm going to kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.